You're listening to Quality Time.
Man, he's the best.
Well, he was otherwise known as Ma-In, yeah, on that funny black TV show. So,
you know what that makes me want to do?
Start up this week's Quality Time.
It makes me not want to let go ever, you know?
You know, this week's episode is going to make you moist.
There's something about starting it out with disco. It really gets me wet.
This makes me want to put on my angel wings and play guitar. Because I feel like a guardian of the galaxy.
Yeah, bitch.
Paint my face green, baby. Because I am not of this planet.
Welcome back to Quality Time, everybody. My name is Eric Woodworth, your host extraordinaire.
And if I stay still long enough, no one can see me.
Yeah, hold your breath.
I'm a wrestler now.
Welcome back to Quality Time, all you Quality Timers out there. My name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you once again for being here with us. And if I can introduce none other than my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth.
Who are you talking about?
I'm sorry, who's joining us tonight?
That's right. I'm Stephen King. I figured I'd join you on your show, see if you're talking about the dark and talking about the walking guy tonight.
The walking guy?
Yeah, you know, walking guy?
Yeah, Christopher?
The walking man? Is he in your dreams?
Walking
dude.
It happens, the walking dude.
Yeah,
for sure.
He's in all my books now. I just write everything about him and tie all of my books together. He's also Cujo.
It's a universe now. I didn't intend for that originally, but now that's what it is.
Somehow I'm going to make actually the devil into Cujo. They're going to be like a different character. He's part dog as well.
You ever heard of part dog, part Cujo?
I'm also going to tie the dark tower into Lawnmower Man.
Okay, enough. I got it.
He turns into a tower. I'm Stephen King. I make this up. I write six pages a day.
Wait a minute. Why is your Stephen King also kind of Andy Rooney from 60 Minutes?
I'll tell you another thing.
And Smucker. What is it
with Smuckers and Stephen King? Sometimes I like to take a donut and empty out the jelly and fill it with chocolate.
Stupid. So Jeremy, you're back in a full effect. Coming off, this is episode 101. We've done this now 101 times. We're there.
And we've been doing this for 10 years now because we only do like a couple episodes a year.
That's it.
Just like episode 7.
Yeah, or episode 8. That'll never be as good as episode 7. But
yeah.
Fuck, you know, it is what it is. We're here, and right here, right now, watching the world go down in history.
There's only one place I want to be, is right here and right now.
Hey, it's y'all tomorrow. Right now. I'm
God old. Made rock and roll to you. Give rock and roll to you. Put it in your anus. What?
Whoa, my God.
He puts rock and roll in your anus.
You're a monster. So welcome back. Tonight we're going over Creepshow. It's a very exciting thing. But you know what, Jeremy? I'm coming off a weekend at Magoobies like none other. I had the pleasure of opening for both Joe Robinson and Justin Schlegel on Friday night, doing good old fashioned stand up comedy. Which was very, very fun. My wife came and actually watched me do stand-up comedy, which is not... That's not a normal thing for the old lady.
Which,
she doesn't...
Where she folds her arms and just stares and never laughs.
Well, so here's the thing. Yeah. My wife will be the first one to tell you that she doesn't think I'm very funny, okay?
And of course.
And that's fine. That doesn't bother me.
And that's because women are hateful creatures.
That's not true. My wife is a very loving mother, and she loves me very much. She doesn't think I'm very funny. Now, she does concede that she admits. She's like, all right, well, other people, I don't think that you're not funny. Like, you clearly have a talent. She's acknowledged that I have a talent.
People think you're funny.
She just doesn't think I'm funny, yes. Which is, it's a very different thing. But
you're too much like you when you're up on stage, which I despise. I think you're funny if you weren't like yourself.
Stop.
Which is exactly the way my wife sees my comedy. So
I think deep down when we got married, my wife said, you're like, you know, he's a little rough around the edges, but eventually, you know, he's not going to be a giant man child his entire life. And she slowly accepted it over the last couple of years that I'm going to be this giant man child my whole life.
I've begun to understand women as a whole, because I'm kind of like that guy that wrote the book, Women Are From Uranus and Men Are From Hell. But it's a very famous book series. I've read all of them. So,
okay.
But women know early in marriage that they're going to learn how to not only eat your balls and hopefully turn you into like a vegetable / zombie corpse that walks around that hopefully never says anything and just kind of communicates with like a giant Frankenstein after they've eaten your soul and your balls. So that's pretty much the way I look at marriage. And that's why I should never go to church again and should never talk about relationships, because I'd pretty much cause anarchy across America.
Well, Jeremy, we all agree that you're a complete and total monster. Like, there's no question about that. There's none of that.
I'm just a complete moron, and my wife puts up with me and hasn't strangled me and killed me yet. So
I buy that. The shows went pretty good this weekend. I came in. So here's the thing. I've been trying to work my way up to get to feature status at my local club here, which is Magoobie's Joke House, which for some reason has been the only nut I can't seem to crack. I can feature in other places. I can go and headline bars and stuff. And I see my peers that I feel like are on my same level doing feature spots. So I set it up. I was just like, hey, you know what, Andrew, I'm going to be up here tonight. Come watch my set. Do this. And so, by the way, I opened up the show Friday night, and I did a pretty fucking good job. Like, honestly, like, I had a pretty good set. Even the wifey was
watching
it. Andrew
is the man who runs Magoobie's.
Andrew Unger, that's the owner of Magoobie's. I go, I'm excited, I'm on cloud nine, I'm like, fuck yeah, I nailed that. Go into his office right afterwards. He goes, I was like, so, did you watch the set? What do you think? I'm thinking, I have my full Bill Paxton swag on, you understand? Like, I walk in, I'm like, so when are we signing me up for feature?
When can I open up for Chappelle?
Exactly, so. Right? He then goes...
She.
Andrew looks at me for a second. He goes, oh, you know, Eric, it was so great. We're going to sign you up for a whole week. In fact, you're headlining. I was like, all right, I feel like he's fucking with me a little bit. And I was like, all right, I know you're playing around. Did you watch it? He goes, no, I didn't have time. I didn't watch it.
But you're great, babe. Everybody says you're great, and you're awesome.
He then proceeds to dress me down for the next like minute and a half in front of the rest of the Murder Mystery cast, and then I walk away in shame. So that was my performing
making it in the biz, going somewhere, knowing that you're doing your best. You are.
Refining
your craft.
Well, I let him know. I was like, listen, eventually, you know, I told Andrew, I was like, listen, eventually I'd really love for you to have an opinion on me, is what I told him, right? And he goes, I was just like, if I send you the video of tonight, will you watch it? He said he would. But how do I even trust that at this point? I can't, right? But I let him know. I was like, listen, if you tell me no, I'm not going to be butthurt. I'm just going to be, you know, you're not the only gatekeeper to the world, pal. You're just the most convenient one for me because you're local. Like, I want to be able to do my own local club.
I think he says that he's sitting behind his desk and he's like, you know, we're going to have Andrew Dice Clay here play here in a month. I'm looking at this resume from this guy named Chris Restivo. I think he should open up for him.
Yeah,
you know?
Chris looks amazing. Chris looks really good.
Him and Tom Myers right there. I think that's who's going to open up.
He ain't wrong. I mean, I wouldn't pick... If you told me Chris Restivo or Eric Woodworth, I'd pick Chris Restivo 9 times out of 10.
He does impressions.
Yeah.
I've seen some of his impressions. They're hilarious.
People love impersonations. Hey, Eric, let me tell you. Do you do a bit where it's Tracy Morgan fucking Robert De Niro in the ass? Do you do that one?
And all these really racist jokes, they're hilarious as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Killing it every time.
And all these homophobic jokes. They're awesome.
So, I had two pretty good shows at Magoobies. I had a real fun time with the wife, actually watching me do it and hanging out with them. There was a really funny part that happened, my wife told me. So, Rob and Joe show Rob and Joe show crossover listeners will probably appreciate this. Tawanda was there sitting with Katie, who is Joe Robinson's girlfriend. Tawanda, who is Rob Mayer's girlfriend of the Rob and Joe show.
They're not married? I thought they'd been married.
No, they're not married.
Unmarried. Been living together for like 20 years
living
now?
Living in sin. Yeah. Real hard. So, my wife, after the show is over, she's like recapping and she's like, you know, Justin was really funny and y'all did a really good job. And like, you know, I really enjoyed it. And she was like, and this is like the third or fourth time my wife's probably met Tawanda. And she goes, you know what? Tawanda's really beautiful. I was like, yeah, I mean, she's a good looking woman. And she goes, she's like, yeah, but she's like really beautiful. And she's with Rob Mayer, which is probably one of the funniest things my wife has ever said. So, just she's completely befuddled by that.
Well,
and I was just like, you know, Rob's a charmer. Like I tried to bring her up to speed. I was like, yeah, honey, Rob's a charmer. I get that. And I was just like, it's same thing with Katie. Katie's a beautiful woman. Joe's fucking dirt ugly. He's a charmer. And so. My wife then turns to me. She looks at me, Jeremy, and she goes, wow, I mean, you're charming. I'm so sorry you're stuck with me. I was like, no, honey, you move the needle for me. You do it. You're my jam. You're my jam, honey boo. So that was Friday night at Magoobies. Now, Saturday, we did the murder mystery. And that was, you know, we had a great time.
Can I go back to when Rob Mayer would talk about, well, you obviously just been haven't been talking to hot chicks on the computer all day. So.
He's Kip now. Yes. Rob yes. Mayer's Kip.
And
okay.
LaFonda instead of Tawanda. Yes. So.
Magoobies Joke House.
By the way, Rob Mayer can destroy me just with his little pink pinky. So
I don't know if that's true.
That's why I do respect him.
I feel like he fears you. I feel like there's a great deal of fear from many people towards you, Jeremy.
He can put me down like a dog. It's all good. So
yeah, he's really going to ruin your career, Jeremy.
Like I have a career.
You're never going to be able to set up those standees at AMC Columbia anymore. Now, Saturday night, we had the murder mystery. So it's pretty much the same crew that was there the night prior. But now we got Tommy Simbazo and some other folks up there. Well, we do the first show, and this is back to the 80s murder mystery, where at one point I do the flash dance from the movie Flashdance. And stage right of me, there is an elderly black woman. Fucking straight up Harriet Tubman, Aunt Jemima, fucking gray-haired afro on like oxygen, sitting front row. And I kind of looked at her and I was like, she looked a little bit familiar, but I didn't know from where. Okay, so I start doing my thing and she sees me dancing and I do some rather acrobatic moves during this act, okay?
Yes.
So there's one part where I do like basically like a giant fucking jump kick towards her.
Oh, gosh.
And she holds like her whole family back like this, like, oh Lord, like I induced a heart attack on this lady. Like I thought I killed this black woman in the front row for a second. 100%. She's holding her heart, like she clutched her pearls as if I'd never murdered somebody with my body movements before. And then,
I was just so hoping that you didn't say you put your balls in her drink. So
I also did at one point, I did a legit tumble. I don't know why I decided to do this, but I was in the moment and I did like a hard ninja roll tumble on stage. And I like came up and I was like inches away from her table. And again, she's like, oh, God. Like legit losing her shit. Right?
Trying to kill the elderly.
Legit losing her shit. So, later in the show...
I killed them that night. They literally died. My comedy kills.
So later on in the show, I go around and there's a portion where in the murder mystery where the cast walks around so you can ask us questions to see if they can solve the murder.
What you want
to
do is get right up in her face and make like an animal. It's like, you filthy bastard, and get started just like a fight in Zoo Animals on Wheels. So
that's good. I like to get a life reference.
Yes.
So it's a portion of the show where I walk around and then you're allowed to ask the cast member questions, right?
Yes.
I get to her and then she goes, I remember you. And I still haven't put my finger on who she is yet, right? And I was like, oh yeah, you do? And she goes, yeah, I was at the other one. You was in a diaper. And when she said I was in a diaper, it all clicked.
Oh gosh.
I remember this lady she's a murder mystery regular now, because this is not the first one or the second one. This is the third one she's been to, okay? But I remember the one that she went to at the Baltimore Comedy Factory. And the one at the Comedy Factory was Sing for Your Life, where I dress as Miley Ray Cyrus. So it's a white underpants. Ooh. And that. So that's what she calls a diaper, okay?
You always produce balls.
Yeah, yeah. So she then sees that, but she came up to me after that show. And she puts her arm around like my lower back. All right. This is at a different show, different occasion. She goes, you know, I saw you out there wearing your whitey tights. And you know what? It reminded me of my husband so much. He used to prance around in his whitey tighties all the time. So I have a legit...
You now have a fallback on your marriage, just in case. So.
60 to 70-year-old black woman...
Hell yeah.
...that I can fall back on if I need to.
You have crossed the barrier.
Listen, sometimes... I finally know how it was when, like, the Rolling Stones or, like, Guns N' Roses
Brown
goes out...
Sugar.
Van Halen goes out on tour, and there's the... You understand... There's the temptations of the road, Jeremy.
It's hard.
And that's
enough.
What I finally have experienced now. I have legit groupies.
You know, it's hard enough to please a white woman, but you know you can't please a black woman. It's all charm, because you know you ain't got it downstairs, boy.
No, well, we're white guys. We eat pussy. It's fine. We do good. That's all. That's our allure, Jeremy. You understand? Like, black guys don't like to eat the puss, so
yes.
they come here and they're like, listen. What I lack in inches, I make up for right here in the tongue game, okay?
Wait a second. I thought I heard about Samuel L. Jackson eating pussy in a movie.
Does he eat pussy in a movie?
Well, he talks about
it. Is that
it.
A
maybe
thing?
Maybe it's just a movie. You know.
Okay. You know what? Listen, I get it. I wish you wouldn't feed into these stereotypes of black people eating pussy in the movies,
If Samuel L. Jackson said it, that's almost like the Bible, of course.
Okay.
So, always real. And the Hateful Eight was a true story. So,
any new stories for you, Jeremy? Any monster cons you've been to? Should we plug the fact that you're going to the New Jersey?
New Jersey Horror Con. And I'm hoping that I will be an actual celebrity there.
No, we're going to have a quality time / Pogo the Clown table up there,
yes,
right?
Yes. Definitely Saturday, Pogo should be there, and I might be there the whole weekend trying to sell my wares.
So if you're a big quality timer, come and see us up at it's HorrorCon.
It is at the Showboat in Atlantic City, and it has at least Ted Raimi there. And the female from Ash vs. Evil Dead and a shitload of other celebrities. I think even Cassandra Peterson, otherwise known as Elmira, is going to be there.
You know what? She's still hot. I don't understand how she is not like beat up and looks horrible yet. Like every time I see a picture of her, I'm like, all right, I would consider.
Still look great.
Yeah, she still has those big old hoots that.
Oh my gosh.
That draw attention away from those big old crow's feet growing underneath her eyes.
When she wears the Elvira outfit, but they're sagging all the way to her belly, that is going to be frighteningly horrible. So. But I'd still.
Yeah. Do we got a date on that, Jer?
21st, 22nd, I think.
Of September.
Maybe this 19th, month. Maybe 20th, 21st, 22nd, yes, of this month.
Yes. So coming up in
whenever
a couple weeks,
airs.
You can come see Jeremy Woodworth live. He's going to be collecting audio for the show, I'm sure, doing all types of stuff. So come on up to New Jersey and come see us, folks.
I went to a rally, which I won't talk about, yesterday with my friend Edward X, and we actually went to the Exorcist house.
Oh, yeah, in Georgetown? And did you take any cool pictures?
Took pictures of him as Father Baron in front of the place and try to reenact some scenes. And right across from the street is the set from St. Elmo's Fire, the same bar, which is called The Tombs now. So,
never watched St. Elmo's Fire.
Well, you really missed out on some good Rob Lowe acting in that movie.
I love Rob Lowe.
Yes, Rob Lowe.
Yes. So
that was my weekend and almost exhausted me yesterday. So
come by, stop by the table, say hi to Jeremy, get your picture with him so we can post it up on the Quality Time Facebook page. By the way, Quality Time Facebook page, you can follow us there. Jeremy, I'm sure you're going to post a couple of pictures up of the Georgetown
yes,
event
I did
that you
yesterday.
Saw.
And the giant, vajay that I took a picture with.
I saw the giant vajay. I didn't see the steps of Georgetown, which is the only thing I would probably really recognize.
Very recognizable. Okay. And I didn't get a picture from my buddy's camera as I was trying to do a singing in the rain pose of Gene Kelly at the bottom of the steps. So, singing in the rain / The Exorcist. So,
well, let's get into tonight's topic. Jeremy, this is a heavy hitter for us again. I think we're coming correct with episode after episode now. We do a lot of horror. We do campy action films. But this one, man, this is another one in my top. This is like another top 10 horror movie for me that we're going over right here. And it's, it's just set up with so many successful people that, do you know when you make like an all-star team, like sometimes maybe they all can't play together. Sometimes you're going to make shit, okay? Sometimes when there's too many egos around, you can't do a good product out of it.
You know, regular films are just padded, where if you do short stories, you just get almost all action.
Yeah. And this one is damn near perfect in that movie genre where it's multiple horror movies all in one. This is none other than 1982's Creepshow. Written mostly by Stephen King, the master of horror.
Who wrote the screenplay as well.
Who wrote the screenplay, who is in the movie and acts within it. Directed by Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead director, George A. Romero.
Have they made Diarrhea of the Dead where all the dead poop at people? So
this is just
all the diarrhea of the dead.
Oh no, it's a Mexican standoff. It's just two assholes looking at each other. Fully
he has
loaded.
He has a burrito. He has a burrito. Yeah. So
it's George A. Romero. But on top of that, on special effects, leading all the monster effects of this, it's Tom Savini and some of his best work he's ever done in film.
This has the genre which you must say is probably one of the best horror comedies of all time as well. Right up there with Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, and name another one. So.
Army of Darkness, yeah, Dead Alive.
Dead Alive, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Lots of those ones.
Sorry, keep going.
Yeah. So it's a really good ensemble cast. Actors out the ass: Adrian Barbeau, Leslie Nielsen, Ted Danson, Tom Atkins. Who else am I missing from this all-star cast, Jeremy?
Adrian Barbeau.
I said that was the first one.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris. Oh, yeah. Very young Ed Harris is in this film.
Hal Holbrook.
Hal Holbrook. I love him.
Hal Holbrook. Who else is other than Stephen King? This is probably his best role ever.
Yeah, Stephen King stars in it. And this is one of those movies kind of similar to if you've ever seen The Twilight Zone, if you've ever seen the movie Cat's Eye. What it is five stories within the movie that arc into one giant movie. And it's really great. Based off of the comic book strips and the horror comics of like the 1950s and 60s. Creepshow. I mean, we're here. This is it.
And you don't have to pay the EC Comics for Tales from the Dark Side. So
yeah, that's another
Tales from the Dark Side, kiddies.
Yeah, similar to Tales from the Crypt or any.
We'll make
of those
our things. Own version. It's called Creepshow.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we don't really need you that much, pal. All right.
Zero money goes to William M. Gaines. So
I like it because it. R.I.P. Burt Reynolds, by the way, but it reminds me of like that. Yeah, it's like a regular hat. It's just bigger. You know what I mean?
You know, we want to do a thing about a superhero. He's just like a Daredevil. Well, we can't afford that. We'll just do Darkman instead. Yeah, that's gonna be perfectly fine. So
yeah,
you're gonna pay Marvel Comics shit.
When you can't make it, you fake it, right?
Maybe I should wear a hat.
So, the movie opens up to that ghastly music that we were just playing to an angry dad who is played by none other than Jeremy?
Tom Atkins.
Name some other famous Tom Atkins roles, Jeremy.
Well, obviously, that would be the greatest Halloween film of all time, Season of the Witch, Halloween 3.
Ah, I'm
my
glad that
favorite
you,
Halloween.
Jeremy, I'm glad that you brought up Halloween 3 completely accidentally, I know. But so Halloween 3 actually came out the same year as this movie. Did you know that,
yeah,
Jeremy?
Yeah, so they should have released it in October, but they didn't.
No, here's the thing. So Warner Brothers, who released Creepshow, knew that that the new Halloween 3 was coming out without Michael Myers.
Yes.
And they had predicted that this was going to be a huge flop. So they withheld the release date to be early November because they were so sure that people were going to be fucking pissed that there was not Michael Myers in the Halloween movie.
Yes.
That everybody would go flock to see this movie, Creepshow. And it was a gamble, and it 100% paid off because, by the way, this is the only movie George Romero has ever directed that debuted number one in the box office.
Yep, and Tom Atkins, the only actor who I believe I was inappropriately touched by on my back.
Oh,
so,
yeah?
Yes.
I like that you've documented all celebrities that have ever touched you inappropriately.
I would really like to be inappropriately touched by some celebrities, except male celebrities. So, you know.
No. Agree to disagree. So,
I hate to say when I went through the list, I think this film has more actors that I've actually met in person or seen in person. Because I went through the list, the dug up father was John Amplis, who was also in Martin from the other Romero films,
mm-hmm.
and also Martinez from Dawn of the Dead. David Early, the black guy.
Oh, the black guy.
Only black guy in the film, of course.
I like it, yeah.
Who was towards the end, was also in Dawn of the Dead as one of the TV spokesmen. And I met him in person, got his picture.
Wait a minute, which character is he?
He's the guy who in the elevator trapped at the end, who's talking through the door.
Ah, okay. Gotcha,
that's right,
gotcha.
Mr. Pratt! So, obviously, Romero I've met. Stephen King I got to see at the Walmart here in Dundalk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't actually meet him because the line was gosh-awful long, but he was here in Dundalk. So,
what year was this that Stephen King...
This was like 5-6 years ago.
So Stephen King did a book signing.
Yes, at Dundalk Walmart.
Dundalk Walmart. I can't believe this.
Exactly.
Was it Stephen's King?
Stephen's King.
Yeah.
Now, even I was surprised with that. Just him going to Dundalk is amazing in itself.
Yeah, I write that book. Hey, my name is Stephen King. I write that book, Carrie's Fisher. I also write Conjo. I don't know if you ever heard of my other book, The Shining. And, of course, I'm sure you're all familiar with The Red Mile. I write all these books.
Looked exactly like Dennis Chapman. Yes. So,
yes, good call.
And obviously, Galen Ross, who is the chick from Dawn of the Dead. I've met her. Savini, of course, who goes to a lot of shows. Adrian Barbeau, who I just met, and she does our little openings every once in a while. And of course, Tom Atkins. So I think that almost sets a record for how many people in a movie I've met.
I like that you met an actor that who's named after a diet that you'll never do. All right,
The Barbeau diet.
Tom what? Atkins.
Oh,
okay. I tried.
Yeah. So.
So the movie opens up with a very angry Tom Atkins as the dad here, and he finds this Creepshow comic book that his son Billy is reading, who is actually the son of none other than.
I don't know.
It's Stephen King's son. That's actually.
Oh my gosh.
It's Joe King right there. Little Joe King. So.
I did not know that.
Here's a little audio clip from the intro here where he's talking to his son.
I never saw such rotten crap in my life. Where do you get this shit? Who sells it to you? I'm talking to you, young man. You want to answer me when I'm talking to you. You remember who puts the friggin' bread on the table around here, don't you?
Friggin'. Dad, don't be too hard on him. All the kids read them.
My boy isn't all the kids. Want to know where this is going, Billy? In the garbage. Right into the friggin' garbage. Now, you got any smart mouth about that?
No, it's any worse than the books you keep in your dresser. Those ones under your underwear. Those sex books.
Can we talk about the high level of autism that this kid has just in that... It's not like those sex books that you have. Anyway, right, continuing on with the audio.
Stan, you didn't have to
hit him. Not only do I find out he's reading this crap, he's a goddamn little snoop as well.
No, it wasn't like that! Beg for me to get your coffin on Sunday!
The windows are open downstairs. I better go down and close them. The rain will get in.
No, I'll do it. I got some garbage I want to throw away.
Daddy, please don't throw it away. I'm sorry.
The next time, young man, I find you with a worthless piece of shit like this again, you won't sit down for a week, buddy boy. Remember that.
Oh, man, that's scary.
Can we talk about some of the stars of the scene? Like the Rodan thing hanging from his ceiling?
I did. You know what?
And Godzilla on the wall?
We had that toy. We had the Rodan toy. It was pretty dope. It was
we didn't have the wings, though.
If you aren't familiar with who Rodan is, that is a Godzilla creature toy that was sold, had to be sold in the 70s, I'm guessing.
Obviously flying.
Yeah, and it was suspended from the ceiling, and we at the Woodworth household probably picked it up at a yard sale one day for pennies on the dollar.
As well as Godzilla.
Yeah, and we did have that same Godzilla in there, too.
And he burned in the fire.
That was some good shit that we had back in the day.
As well as the Ewok village.
There was pluses to living with a hoarder father. Mm. He bought lots of cool shit for us that made our house look real trashy, but we loved it, all right?
We loved our Ghostbusters station on our shelf, so...
Shortly after this, also another little tidbit from that scene, you probably heard that slap in the audio. Apparently Stephen King was watching this scene and he was very concerned about Tom Atkins actually slapping his kid. So if you actually watch it in slow motion, you see his hand move, but you could see, the little Joe King, he actually lifts his hand up and slaps himself in that scene. So if you ever watch it, you can see that, unfold. A little joke that Stephen King thought was real funny to play is that the day that they were filming this, they had him done up in like makeup to look all bruised up. And so he took him to like a local Burger King or something like that. And they went through the drive-thru and they're ordering. And he looks like he just got the shit kicked out of him. And sure enough, the police got called on Stephen King. And he was just like, oh, you know, guys, it's me, Stephen King. Didn't really beat my kid. It's just makeup. Just playing, just joshing with you.
Stephen King, the perfect look as a father that's going to be abusive and both evil retired. It's like, lock him up. Lock him up.
I'm going to slap the lisp out of you, kid.
Why do you have two IDs here? One says Bachman. Who the fuck is this Richard Bachman guy? What are you trying to hide? You're already on the run, bastard? Beating your kid? You're writing satanic movies about how the devil is good and the skeletons outside your kid's window, you bastard.
So shortly after the father leaves, there is a ghoulish skeleton that appears outside of Billy's window.
Not the Crypt Keeper.
No. Looks very Crypt Keeper-like. It's just standing there smiling at him, and Billy does like the little baseball thing with his hands like, fuck yes, let's get this shit
Hello,
on.
Satan.
He's so excited to see.
Time to kill my dad.
So excited to see this fucking monster outside his window. They flash to the comic book that is now in the trash outside, and they roll the opening credits, which the opening credits are actually, I really love it because it's all comic book stuff, and I really just like how, I think like half of this movie is really shot in like three out of the four stories are pretty much shot like a comic book is.
Can we talk about John Harrison, otherwise known as the guy that does the music for this?
Yes, please. Give me some tidbits on him.
I met him at Fangoria, and I don't know. I still didn't look to see whether he used like a DX7 or a Roland, but obviously did all the music. But he's also the director of Tales from the Dark Side, which is another great compilation movie.
It is really good. I like the little thing. That's the one with the little demon doll, right? Is that the little demon doll that's like, looks like a little African demon doll that like goes through the door like
No.
That's not Tales from the Dark Side?
No, that's the Tales of Karen Black.
Tales of Terror. What it's called?
Trilogy of Terror.
Trilogy of Terror.
That was the 70s. This is the 80s, which has one of the first Steve Buscemi roles.
I'm sorry, Quality Timers. I failed you.
Steve Buscemi, but also in one of the scenes with the mummy that comes back to life, you see the scene from Dawn of the Dead where John Harrison is actually the handyman zombie that attacks Trooper in the JCPenney's, and he ends up getting the screwdriver in the ear.
Oh, that
it's the
is
the same guy,
good. That's
same
good
director.
Scene.
So
artwork is just great throughout the whole opening scene. It's all like comic book illustrated shit. It looks really fucking dope. And then the comic book flashes to the first story that we will unfurl tonight, which is Father's Day. And
Father's Day.
I don't know, Jeremy. Do we want to have the larger conversation? Maybe we'll save it to the end. We'll save the larger conversation about the whole movie, about which is the best stories, like how you rank them. But we'll go over Father's Day first. So it brings you into this upper class debutante family that is sitting there expecting none other than their Aunt Bedelia.
Would you say that they're snooty? Snotty.
They are real snotty. They are as snotty and as snooty as fucking bullshit. God, you hate. First of all, the good thing about this, the good thing about short stories like this is that it's really hard for you to care about the characters. So you really are more invested. I'm like, man, I can't wait to see what fucking happens to this guy.
Except for the new guy on the block who's the idiot, Ed Harris.
Yes.
When he still has almost more than a half head of hair.
So you see Aunt Sylvia, who is dressed in white, looks very elegant. The younger generation girl, Cass, her brother, Richard, and her boyfriend, who's played none other than a very young Ed Harris. Okay, I thought Jeremy had something on Ed Harris at that point. We're going to move on. So,
hey, I think Bud is still alive. He's down in the abyss. Sorry.
So, they're sitting around talking about Aunt Bedelia and explaining Aunt Bedelia's situation to Ed Harris's character. Here's a clip.
Relationship. Then when he was about 184, he had a stroke. And lucky Bedelia, she got to nurse him full time.
I'm sorry, they're talking about Bedelia's father, who is deceased now for 7 years, and I should have prefaced that before I played this clip. Continuing.
Then,
damn it,
she met a fella. This, sir, a real September courtship.
September courtship? This is October or November at the very least. He was 75. Aunt Bedelia's, never mind my dears. The point is, Henry, Bedelia loved her rather elderly beau, and her own father had him.
Yarborough was the guy's name, and he supposedly died in a hunting accident. That's what's on the books, anyway.
Ooh, that's what's on the books, anyway. So, yeah, it's really cool shot, like, this whole opening sequence, because it, like, shows it in a very comic book-esque style. Like, they make these little panes around the windows. The guy gets shot, and when he falls down, there's, like, a big blood stain around it, like, outlined. It's fucking really visually cool.
And should we mention this is John Larmer? Or John... Larmer? Josh Larmer? Oh, gosh.
I'll take your word for it.
John Larmer. And, of course, this is his first role in the movie. So,
yes.
As the father. So,
yes. You bitch! And there is a little bit of a flashback where you get to see him being very mean to Bedelia and demanding his Father's Day cake.
After viewing this movie for, like, the 100th time, I realized... Wow, they got a Rolls, and they are almost like driving it off the road as she is like just mm-hmm. barely drunken drivingly in a Rolls.
Yeah, they're trying to fuck this Rolls Royce up. So here's a little bit more about Aunt Bedelia.
On the books, anyway.
For Bedelia, it was the last straw. She bashed her father's head in with a marble ashtray.
So rumor
introduced
has
the ashtray.
Well, how?
With the little boy naked.
It was good riddance to some extremely bad rubbish. And my lovely niece and my handsome nephew have very good reasons for being pleased at old Nathan's death. There was no trouble about the will. Share and share alike.
So, Bedelia killed her father, and I don't have the audio for this, but basically they have a flashback, and as Bedelia's thinking about it, and her father's sitting in a chair, he's crippled after the stroke, and he's slamming his cane down on the arms of the chair, going, Bedelia! You want my Father's Day cake, Bedelia? You bitch! I need that Father's Day cake! And it shows Bedelia frantically making this cake in the other room.
She is just adding way too much icing
to
that cake.
So much icing as she's fucking freaking out like, it's coming in a minute! And she finally comes out. She picks up this ashtray, which is it's a giant marble ashtray with an angel sitting on it that she picks up by the angel and then fucking whacks it across his head as he falls onto the ground and dies. Now, interesting thing about this ashtray, Jeremy, tell our listeners a little bit about the ashtray from Creepshow.
I thought it was in every scene, which in the next one is in the doc, in the meteor guy's office sitting in the back. Mm-hmm. But he's also in the doctor's office, just sitting next to where he gets, I think, like a butcher's knife, which I think is an extra scene that they didn't mention. So I think it's actually six times. What's the third one with Leslie Nielsen? It's in Leslie Nielsen's bathroom.
Mm-hmm. And it's used as a soap dish in that room.
In where was it in the crate?
The crate is on the writing desk when Henry writes the letter to Wilma.
And obviously in the E.G. Marshall in his apartment, I think it's in his bathroom is when he washes his hands.
I'm sorry,
as well.
Yes, that's the soap dish there. Sorry.
So where is it in the crate?
So in the crate, it's on the desk when he's writing the letter. And The Tide Takes You Over, it's on the nightstand next to Richard's bed.
Right.
So Leslie Nielsen's bed.
Okay, so Leslie Nielsen, we forgot that one. And of course, in Billy's room when he has the voodoo doll next to it.
Yes.
Which I even missed that.
Spoiler alert, okay?
Yes. Jeez. Oh, authentic voodoo doll. Somebody cut this out. Hey!
Hey, we like it. We fuck. Okay.
Hey, we're garbage men.
All right. You ready to go out there and do your thing, hey, baby?
I hate to say that the effects men, Tom Savini and Nicotero, have been the best directors, and I just love the remake of The Night of the Living Dead. To me, it's like almost perfection.
It is pretty fucking good.
Gosh.
So, the next thing that we see is Aunt Bedelia. She goes out. She parks her Rolls Royce. I'm not going to fix that. I'm going to keep going on. She goes out to the graveyard that's on the property, and she sits down next to her father's grave, and we get this here.
See, Everything I wanted, he wanted for me.
Oh, you stupid bastard. You screwed it all up. You screwed up my mother. You screwed me. You got me so mad.
I love this sound effect.
Crazy. Yeah.
How the fuck did I added that?
I want my coke, Medallia. You bitch. You called me a bitch. Sylvia fixed it all. Ashtray back in place. Chair overturned.
This is an amazing piece of acting, I think she does here.
Nobody could catch us. Nobody. You taught me. You taught Sylvia. You taught us all.
Whiskey falls into the ground, pouring into the grave.
So she's drinking Jim Beam, and she drops it, and it pours into the grave.
The water of life.
The peaceful.
And all of a sudden, her father comes back from the dead as he crawls up from that grave, and Bedelia quickly meets her demise.
And by the way, this is word to the wise. If you ever like find a reanimated body, do not cremate the body, because that'll start everything to rain around a graveyard and bring an entire graveyard
yes,
back to life.
Yes, Return to the Living Dead style.
That it's just word to the wise. Don't do it.
Now, fun fact about this scene. In Father's Day, Aunt Bedelia's father came to life after she spilled the whiskey on the grave. In Gaelic, the word whiskey is translated as water of life.
Did you say Gaelic?
Yes, I did. I did say Gaelic.
Is that
guilty
like a different
charged
language or something?
So... I can't even continue after that. So, now the word whiskey is, as I was trying to say, is translated as water of life, and is possibly a nod to James Joyce and his book Finnegan's Wake. Now, in that book, a builder's laborer falls from a ladder and breaks his skull, but is revived when someone spills whiskey on his corpse at the wake. The story Finnegan's Wake, in turn, is based on an old Dublin street ballad. So that is the reason. Now, I never, until I had done the minor amount of research it takes to do this show, that was based on anything other. Like, I never thought, like, her spilling the liquor had anything to do with it. I just thought this is, oh, he just comes back because it's this Father's Day. I had no idea.
Everybody knows that if an Irishman dies, you just pour some whiskey on him. He might come back to life. You know, that's not racist.
I like
it. He's such an alcoholic. Put some whiskey on him. He'll come back to life.
Now, Aunt Bedelia has already met her demise, but the rest of the dinner party is slowly waiting in there so they can have their ham when Aunt Bedelia comes back in. And Ed Harris proves the reason that he should be murdered in this movie, because he and his girlfriend Cass are listening and dancing to this. Listening and dancing to disco in the 80s. Very taboo.
When the 70s were over and disco is now barred.
Oh, yeah. And if you want to see Ed Harris put on some of his best dance moves you'll ever see in any... I don't know another movie that Ed Harris dances in. But you can see it in this one.
Pretty sure he dances in Needful Things and in The Abyss. When he finds out his wife has died, he starts dancing, so...
Don't you remember that part in History of Violence with his goofy-ass eye where he just does that dance sequence? It's good stuff. Good stuff. So, as they're dancing around, dinner is put on hold because Aunt Delia has not returned yet. And old Ed Harris goes out to go check out the graveyard to see if he can go retrieve Aunt Delia. Now, they said it's been about an hour, which means she arrived at 6 o'clock. You get to see the clock do go right at 6. Now, if we're doing the math here, okay... If we're doing the math here, that means it's 7 o'clock, okay? Father's Day is in June. There's no way it's pitch black dark outside. It's 7 o'clock, June, summertime. Makes no sense at all. So, solid goof of the movie right here.
Damn it.
So, I guess that's the podcast, guys. We can't talk anymore about the...
This movie is shot to fuck.
So
fuck it all.
So in what is probably the most mediocre death in this movie, I'll say that this is the most mediocre.
I can buy the
death.
Whole zombie thing, but now it's too dark, too early in June. Fuck this. Fuck this whole thing, fuckers.
So
you pour whiskey, you bring back the dead, that's fine too. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you think you can just go ahead and do whatever you fucking want?
Why don't you just change time and space for your fucking movie?
So Ed Harris then wanders out there. He sees the open grave of Bedelia's father. He falls into it. He's laying there, and for way too long, he's laying in this grave. He sees a tombstone that's slowly being pushed into it. It's kind of like, all right, do you remember the scene in, isn't it Naked Gun? Isn't it Naked Gun, the scene where
he pulls up himself back into the building on holding onto a penis?
No, it's not. Maybe it's not Naked Gun. What's the movie where the guy's about to get run over by a steamroller and he's like, no! And it's like the slowest thing that's happening. Like, do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm thinking of Steve Martin thing where the child is about to get run over by a steamroller.
And he's
yes.
like, no! And yes. it takes like 5 minutes for that steamroller to finally hit him. It's so funny. But that's what it's like. He's sitting there. He finds Aunt Bedelia's body as it's slowly getting inched over. By the time he's ready to get up out of this grave, he sees the ghastly figure that is the reanimated corpse of Bedelia's father looking at him using some type of weird telekinesis to inch this tombstone over.
He tries to get out of the grave, but it ends up pulling Bedelia onto him with her hand. So,
and ultimately it falls down and crushes Ed Harris, RIP, gone way too soon.
Can I reenact that scene?
Yes.
When it finally falls on him?
Yeah. Good reenactment, Jeremy.
Oh, yes.
Now, inside, they're arguing back and forth of...
Let's not forget, as he walks from the grave, I want my cake. Yeah, can we say that they got a good use out of whatever modulation of this voice, because it's used at least 3 more times in this movie? Yeah. So
I want it. I want it now.
Please, God, don't let my life be in vain.
So, inside, the rest of the survivors are arguing who should go out and find Cass's husband, Ed Harris. Bedelia's younger, I guess she's a niece. Is she a niece?
Yeah, you know,
she's
young.
A generation younger than Aunt Bedelia, but they call her Aunt Sylvia. Aunt Sylvia decides to get up and she goes, I'll go find him. He's such a handsome young man. She totally wants to cuck Cass's husband, like, for real. So she goes into the kitchen and is asking for Mrs. Danvers. Mrs. Danvers, where are you, Mrs. Danvers? Mrs. Bambers? And Bambers. She then opens the kitchen door. All the lights seem to appear off. She looks through the window of the open door she's standing next to, and Mrs. Danvers' face plops up against the glass like this, and you see that dead body. Sylvia screams, and then all of a sudden you see that fucking ghastly reanimated corpse right in front of her, and he goes, I want my cake, and takes fucking Sylvia's head and turns it 180 degrees
totally
around.
Does a Steven Seagal on her. So.
Yeah, fucking straight up under fire or broken arrows her, fucking straight up twists her neck in half.
Does a Meryl on her from Walking Dead, so otherwise known as a Henry Portrait of Sarah Killer.
I like it. Good so. Meryl reference. Meryl. Good Meryl.
Meryl and Durrell.
So, Cass and then Richard are the last two left. Cassie is very, very scared. So they wander into the kitchen together. They see the dirty footprints that ghoul has left behind.
Can we mention another star of the movie, which is the oven, which has like 12 burners on it, which is like a serious fucking oven. Oh my
gosh. That's a
gosh.
Serious.
You could do.
Serious fucking
that
oven.
That is a serious kitchen oven.
Man, you could cook fucking so many grands
Bet
biscuits.
You that costs like $10,000 at least.
Make like 24 grands biscuits.
You have
up
to
in that
buy
bitch.
Like an extra propane tank just to power that fucker.
And you could fucking end like, you know.
You know how many pans of eggs you could cook at one time? Like at least 12. It's 12 dozen eggs at once.
Do you think like Hitler walked into that thing? He's like, oh, this is a great oven. I love it. Looks very good. You know, I could use an oven like this.
You know how many Jews he could burn in that oven?
Well, listen, I made people make it, and yes. Then you had to say Jews. God, racist.
Well, Hitler certainly knew his ovens. Farfurgnugen.
So Richard and Cass then walk into the kitchen to see what they can find, and we have this audio clip here.
Father's Day, and I got my cake.
He's standing there
Father's Day.
With Sylvia's head with candles on it.
And they got out scot-free. They didn't even die. Yeah. They just enjoyed a cake after that, and that was the end of the story.
They sat down and had a wonderful Father's Day after that. You know, the music was scary, but really, they go, arg and gag, and then they sit down and they're like, oh, well, let's just eat this wonderful cake then, I guess.
Which is almost as good as the movie Thanksgiving, so.
That is true. That is
white meat, dark meat.
So, next we go on
to... Can we talk about my other favorite horror film? Arbor Day?
I've never seen Arbor... that's not true. I've seen clips of Arbor Day. But tell me why that's your favorite horror movie, Jeremy.
Because of the song in the movie. Put your hands up, boy, when you're talking to me. Be there when I feed the tree.
Well, that was worth it, Jeremy. That
Thanks.
Was really worth it.
Thank you. I send that out to you, Matt Cannon. So.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Kesey. We need you, brother.
And of course,
James Finn.
James Finn. So overall, listen, Creepshow in general is off to a monster start, wouldn't you say, Jeremy?
Yes. Yes, we have seen a head being turned off and made into a cake, and candles put on her face.
So, the next story is called...
John Amplis as the corpse walking around.
Yes. Okay, great, great.
Just in case I didn't mention it.
I think you mentioned it earlier, but we'll go on. So, next story in this lineup is The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill, which I don't think Jeremy will be able to stop giggling through this one. Yeah, so, if you, quality timers who listen to this, Jeremy will start laughing just when you talk about a scene. And this one, how much does this one tickle you, Jeremy?
It truly, to me, is the real Stephen King. When he, no matter how smart he is writing, this is the real Stephen King. So.
This is him. This is what he does. So, it opens up.
He wrote this part for himself, and he does it to a fucking T. Oh my gosh.
He opens up, and a giant meteor crashes as you're there on the Jordy Verrill's farmland, crashes about 100 yards away from him. He comes over, he sees this glowing red and orange and blue orb that's kind of sitting there in a giant fucking circular meteor crate, which... Okay, I'll be honest with you, doesn't make sense because the trajectory in which it was coming in 100% should be like a big, like if it's like if you shot a missile into the ground, okay, it would be like a big trail
and
then yeah, instead it's a big circle, makes no sense, but whatever, you know, where it's Creepshow, we fuck. So he pokes it with a stick and then he goes, well, it looks like it's okay now. And
gotta cool the sumbitch off.
He goes and touches it with his big dumbass fingers and burns the shit out of his hands, sticks them in his mouth to cool them off. And then he starts thinking, like, man, what a great thing for me. I have this giant meteor here. And he starts this whole sequence, this whole story has a lot of Jordy. Oh, what's Jordy thinking right now? And the first thing he thinks of is how much the university would pay for his meeting. Yeah.
I wonder how much they'd pay for it up to college.
I wonder how much they'd pay for it up to college.
$200. $75. $200. Anita Verrill didn't raise no idiots. Keep account.
So Jordy Verrill getting his big old $200 payoff.
$200. And should we mention this is, I think, John Larmer's second role in the movie?
Is it John Larmer's second role?
I think so.
What was his first role?
Otherwise known as the father in Father's Day.
Okay, so he's the father walking around Father's Day.
I believe
so. So John Larmer will show up over and over again in this sequence because every fantasy that he has is this same character playing it. We'll get more into that as we go. And also plays his father in this, which is Jordy Verrill's father, Jordy Verrill Sr. So he takes a big old bucket of water and he ends up splitting the meteor in two and completely breaking it. Jordy is obviously very, very devastated by this.
Wait a second. They say that it's Richard Grantham. All right. I was completely. It was another old person that wasn't him. Okay. Fine. I was wrong.
So Jordy then has another flashback, another fantasy about what's going to happen when he tries to get money for this broken meteor. Let's go here.
$200 for a broken meteor. You must be joking. I would give you 2 cents.
Jordy Verrill, lunkhead. Barrel Luck's always in. You spell that kind of luck B-A-D. Still, I got to try.
So he starts picking up the meteor, which is like glowing with this blue fluorescent goo that he just pours right into the earth immediately. And then throws it into this barrel. And I mean, it's pretty gross looking, but kind of gnarly at the same time. And then you get this line.
Meteor shit.
Meteor shit, which is just a classic moment from the movie. So inside the house, he decides to watch some good old WWF wrestling. And since Jeremy hates wrestling, I'll guys put you D. He's in there. He's watching a match with Bob Backlund. And it's not commentated by none other than future owner of WWF, Vince McMahon, who's calling the ones and twos because at this time in the early 80s, still owned by his father, Vince Sr. So
and still not all steroided up. So
no, he's not totally roided out yet. Yeah. He's one of the worst announcers the WWF ever had. And thank God he hired other people to do that.
And he was a normal person when he was even on David Letterman back in the day. So
I really listen. I'm a big fan of Vince McMahon. If I ever got a chance to meet him, I'd wrestle him. I'd like to get down in there, put him in a headlock, let him touch my balls a little bit if he wanted to. You know, I'd be gay for him. I don't care. We'd do our thing. So Verrill, he looks down at his fingers after he's been sitting there a while, and he sees that his fingers that he touched the meteor with are sprouting some green mold and fuzz on it, which kind of freaks him out. And he goes, oh, darn! And he's scared to go and call the doctor. And, well, he has another flashback. I didn't bring up the audio for this.
With
but
the
he
same
goes,
actor.
Same
as the
actor
doctor
again now playing the doctor. Institute. Where he goes, he's just like, oh, Mr. Verrill, it appears those fingers are going to have to come off. And he slides his chair over and there's all these like instruments that he can choose from. But instead he chooses this giant meat cleaver that he pulls
out.
And
I think you barely see the child from the ashtray in that scene on the counter.
Yeah, yeah.
So
and he takes his thumb down the edge of the meat cleaver and he goes, this is going to be extremely painful.
Oh,
no! So it's at this point he hangs up the phone when he's about to call the doctor, and he realizes that he's been sucking his fingers the whole time. So he goes back into the bathroom. He looks into the mirror, and the music builds and builds. And he sticks his tongue out, and Jeremy.
What?
He sticks his tongue out, and,
there's shit, and his green, and his tongue is green.
Tongue is green as fuck.
Yes,
it looks.
But I thought he had
horrible.
He didn't have a line there though.
No,
he
just
has
no
the
line.
the weird theremin noise of.
Oh no, my tongue's green, Jordy.
Gosh, I thought there was a line. Sorry.
No, there's no line.
Good. But
later, the farm is now really being overgrown. Jordy is
and of course from the hole that is being overgrown with shit. Then there's still the glowing light from the hole where he poured the siloom like goo into. So.
Yeah, real heavy metal like. You know what I mean?
So, as little demons crawl out and start going into the world.
So, Jordy has now started to have the growth, like this fucking green shit, grow all over his face. He pats
obviously
the
an
pads of his chair.
Obviously,
everywhere.
An allegory to herpes.
Yes, yes.
Because this is the early 80s.
Don't fuck unclean meteors, guys. If you're listening to this,
and this is how
more,
AIDS started.
I can't be more serious about that, okay? So, Jordy freaks out a little bit. He goes, oh, no, 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 no. He makes himself, goes into the
finds
kitchen.
His special stash of vodka that he's been hiding.
Pop-off vodka, which I used to, in high school, call fire water. it's fucking horrible.
Only the best, Nesta Cisco.
So he takes like a whole vat of he takes like a half a bottle of vodka, pours it into like a giant container of orange juice, sits down back in front of his wrestling program, which if I'm being honest with myself, maybe I'm not different from Jordy Verrill at all. I mean, if I start growing all this shit out of me, it's midnight, I'm not going to go to patient first. I'm going to sit there, watch my wrestling programs and get real hammered, and hopefully this thing, a whole thing will tide over. And then Jeremy, he sits down in this chair. And what does he say?
I'm growing.
Now, George...
As he turns to religion on the television to help comfort him.
Yes,
so.
Yes. Now, Jordy Verrill, the character, when George Romero told Stephen King how to act in this, do you know what his acting inspiration was?
To have a look as if Wile E. Coyote when he's falling off a cliff.
Yes, yes. That's this whole thing. Yes. He's like, look like Wile E. Coyote as
just
he's about
over,
to smack
overact
something.
As best more than Jim Carrey would. Yes. In this film before Jim Carrey was. So.
So Jordy takes a little nap and he falls asleep, but when he wakes up, he's now has a full ZZ Top style fucking Swamp Thing beard growing. He decides that he's itching so much that he goes into the bathroom and pours himself a little bath. And the water looks so fucking refreshing. It just looks like the best thing in the whole world. And he goes,
should we talk about the line before that?
Yes.
Not there!
Yeah, he pulls his pants down, he looks at his dick, and he goes, oh no, not there! Jordy! You lookhead!
You got the herps on the dick.
There
so.
You go. There you go. You did it again, baby.
The herps.
So he then sees an apparition of his father, who is the same actor he's had all the
time. Jordy, you get in that water, you might as well sign your death warrant, Jordy. You already dead, Daddy. You've been gone for how many years now?
Jordy, you get in there. You're as good as you're a dead man, Jordy. Don't come into that bathtub, Jordy.
I got the stuff, Dad. I'm as good as gone.
You're as good as gone? Are you as good as gone when you killed your mother, when you pushed you out of your body?
Now we're having fun. We're ad-libbing. We're having a good time. We're having a good time.
Or maybe when you helped bring what's-her-name to Colorado in the Dark Man. Jordy!
So, Jordy does not heed his father's words, though. The allure of the water is just too strong. He can almost hear it like calling out to him. He gleefully jumps in and goes, oh yeah, oh that's good, yeah, that feels so, oh yeah, He's basically like me on three Cialis's and a fucking real, like when the wife is real hammered. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Okay, nice. That's all I got.
I like that.
So
you actually still have sex?
You know, quarterly. All it's right, fun. Cool. It's good all times. Right. So he goes, I'm already a goner, daddy, aren't I? Got that meteor shit on me. I'm a goner. So morning comes, and the interior of the house looks like the fucking rainforest now. Jordy emerges from what looks like the floor, but it's actually Jordy, and he's like fucking head to toe completely covered in like moss and overgrowth.
He looks like he's from a Bjork video now.
Yes, he's 100% fucking Bjork video.
And nothing, and he's definitely part of human nature. So.
Yes, yes. And he goes ahead and grabs a shotgun, points it at his head, and blows his own head off.
Please. Please, God.
Which is probably the least goriest death of anything that happens in this film, because it looks just like dirt and shit that just like explodes. And
can I say one thing about this scene?
Yes.
When I did the audio for it, I made my voice a little bit raspier.
So he grabs the shotgun, points at his head, blows his head off, and you can slowly you can hear the TV still on as it's talking about the forecast for Portland, Maine for the next couple of days. It's going to be rain, lots of rain. You're going to see a lot of green coming up these next couple of days.
Just good for you farmers.
Yeah. So
my favorite is where the priest is talking. He's like, yes, there will things will be looking up for you. Not so.
Yeah. So you go out to the main road, and you can see that the growth is now reached out to the main road, and you see a sign, and the sign says Castle Rock X amount of miles, Portland, Maine, which is the closest one,
or Portland, Oregon, for that matter.
Yeah, which is very interesting, because that's Portland, Maine, is what Stephen King doesn't live in Portland, Maine, but it's what he considers home for the most part. It's like I don't live in Baltimore, but like when people ask me, I'm like, yeah, I'm from Baltimore because it's the closest major city to where I live. And then it also has a sign.
I always say Phoenix.
Yes.
Phoenix.
It also has a sign for Castle Rock, which is the place of many a Stephen King tale.
But of course, if it's a person from some sort of Latino descent, I always say Colombia.
Colombia.
I am from Colombia.
You're from Colombia, Maroma?
Yes. Home of Ed Norton. Yes.
Home of Edward Norton and Norton Security, the product, man.
Gangster Columbia.
So
hardcore Columbia.
And that brings us to an end of our second twisted tale from
the second tale is over from Creepshow.
And do you know what else that brings us to an end of, Jeremy?
No.
This brings us to an end of our episode for the night. Yeah, wow. We're giving you a two-parter. We're already an hour in. Well, I'm going to be away at Disney World next week, so yes. We got to make this a two-part episode, and we kind of padded this one out.
But
we
told some fun story. Because we may be talking about Ted Danson soon.
Yo, man, you listen, the best part of Creepshow is still to come. You can catch Kimberly Ambrose at Panic at the Deli on Instagram. Watch me doing this on Twitter. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month. You can go check that out. You can check all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Make sure you hop on the iTunes and the Stitcher. Give us a 5-star rating so we can read it on the show. Jeremy, take us out.
Oh, not there!